Welcome to the International Teacher Podcast with your host, Greg, the single guy, and Matt, the family guy. We're recording episodes from around the globe to tell you about the best kept secret in education. That's right, it's teaching overseas. We're glad to have you.
Ladies and gentlemen, friends and family, international teachers and non-international teachers, or anybody who's just out on a road trip and needs something to listen to, welcome to the International Teacher Podcast with you as always. My name is Matt. I'm a family guy.
And I'm Greg, and I'm the single guy. And you know what, Matt? We lost Kent this time, so we don't have him with us.
Kent, you're missed, but we know you'll be joining us real soon. I think Kent, he had his weekly, was it his pedicure or manicure?
He had a flute lesson and then the manicure.
Okay, right. That's what it was, yeah. And not that we're knocking that, because we would be right there with you, buddy. So,
We need to apologize to our audience. You know, we are a week late on this one. We have done, I don't know if the audience really knows this, they've listened to us, but every 2 weeks is what our goal is. We want to put a podcast out every 2 weeks. And we've been doing this for over a year now. But I think we need to apologize. Life took over. You know, I went to the States, Matt. That's why.
What did you do in Los Estados Unidos, Greg?
I love when you speak El Gringo Espanol.
For U.S., United States, for those of you who don't have Lo Espanol.
Right. I don't hablo either. I went to the grand old state of Wisconsin, and I went to Milwaukee for a wedding. And nice. It was a Lemoyne wedding. So, man, it was great. Really good to see family. You know, I don't go back very often, but I usually go back once a year now because the family's old and my parents are a little older. But I was busy from point A to point B. I didn't stop. I didn't see even friends. I saw a couple friends for a little bit of time, but it was all family. It's one of those trips where it's just family.
I had one of those trips in October too for my brother's wedding. I know what those are like. So when you routed through, did you go through Amsterdam? Did you go through Doha? Did you go through Dubai? Where did you route through?
Well, you know, I usually fly to Dubai and then take a Dubai trip from Dubai straight into Chicago. It's a 14-hour flight, but I don't want to deal with the airports. I don't want to deal with different flights and missing and all the rigmarole with the COVID that's still left over. But, you know, I had to get a COVID test. I know we don't talk about COVID that much, but I had to get a test just to get into the States. Around the world, not even China, I don't think you have to have one to get into China anymore, but we have to have one to get into the States.
China and apparently North Korea now, because apparently it just hit North Korea lately.
I can't believe it, because in the States, they feel like recently it's like there isn't even a COVID out there. So that's the attitude, and I can't believe I had to have a test to get there from where I'm at. And it had nothing to do with where I'm leaving from. It had to do with where I was landing, and that's the U.S. Everybody else traveling around for a little break, they didn't have
it. Yeah, we haven't, wherever we've gone in the Middle East, and I mean, we've been through Bahrain, we've been through Dubai, and even the Maldives, we didn't need any PCR tests anywhere, regardless of if we were sick or not sick or anything. It's just strange, like, does the U.S. lock their borders to U.S. citizens who have, that just makes absolutely no sense. Joe Biden, if you're listening, can you chime in and help us out on that one? Because I'm a bit clueless about it, as I am with most things.
I know more about the world than I know about our own country, man. I guess it's I'll have plenty of time later on to figure things out.
I don't watch the news either, but I guess we aren't missing much. So
I guess not. So here we go. Let's talk a little bit about this, though, Matt. So we missed an episode and we're like a week late.
Yep. Yeah, we did. That's what people understand.
But next week, I'm going to put an episode on there. I just did. I look forward to it because I've done two interviews that are in a library. So I have a library of interviews that are sort of sitting aside in case Matt and I can't meet and I'm not too busy. I can post those interviews that I usually have with people from other countries and the teachers in other countries, et cetera. But I have two that I really look forward to sharing with the audience, especially for the recruiting season is still happening. Right, Matt? Mm-hmm. They're still looking for schools. Some people are still wondering how to do this and how to do that. I had a great conversation with an old friend named Roberto. He's director at a school in Thailand, the Eastern Seaboard School. And he and I had a full-on discussion about recruiting questions and interviews and what to look for. And then the second one that I'm like super ready to, I really want to publish right away, but we're holding back on it, is another one I had with a woman, first-year teacher, and she's in Turkey, and her name is Rose. So that was just, I mean, a lot of fun. And I look forward to that. So our listeners can look forward to a couple new ones coming up. besides just listening to you and I banter, which is always fun and entertaining, right, Matt?
It sure is.
You know, I also want to do a little background here. Matt, how many countries do you think we have listeners around the world in?
Oh, man. What was our initial goal that when we set out on this?
The whole world. And let's just round it off to 200, because you get different things on the internet between 190 to 230. Let's say there's 200 countries.
Assuming Vatican City and Monaco count, and I'm gonna go with somewhere near 100.
You're really close. We're at 90 countries, Matt.
Wow.
90. That's pretty good for 1 year, and we have listeners. So I want to thank out those listeners. I went through that list, buddy, and I looked at that. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, Senegal and Iran. I mean, we have listeners. Someone's listening in Iran, whoever it is. Thank you.
We're big in Iran.
It's not my mom. And then there's Senegal, Australia.
But it could be an imam.
It could. You're right. Gabon in Africa, right? What do you have to say about Gabon? Yeah. I had to look it up on the map. I knew about the country.
Isn't it Gabon?
It's Gabon. It might be Gabon. I mean, I thought I knew a lot about the world, but here, I have three things that threw me for a complete loop. Here's the first one that came in our list. And thank you for the podcast that we use is from Spotify. It's called Anchor. And we use this. They give us a country list all the time.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I sort of looked at this list and I went down the whole, I won't read the whole thing for you, but I ran into three that threw me for a loop, Matt, and I'm going to test your knowledge. Eswatini. Ever heard of it?
Eswatini. Can you spell it? Do you know how to spell it for me?
Eswatini.
That sounds like, oh man, Eswatini. I'm going to go Africa somewhere.
All right, good. It's South Africa. It's inside of South Africa. So it's like a small little pimple in South Africa. And I don't know much about it, but it's pretty cool that somebody's there listening to us.
All right.
The other one is Timor-Leste.
Timor-Leste.
Timor-Leste. L-E-S-T-E.
I want to say that's somewhere around Southeast Asia. Yeah, Southeast Asia is my guess for that one.
Yeah, I heard of Timor before, but I really had to find it on the map. I mean, I gave into Google on this one. It's just to the east of Indonesia.
Yes.
So it's on the very tip of Indonesia head. It totally counts. Good job. Here's the last one for you. And I struggled with this because I can't always trust Google. Guernsey.
Liechtenstein. Huh?
Guernsey.
Oh, that's Guernsey. That sounds like is that UK or somewhere around there?
It's somewhere around there. You're right. It's a French. It's an island off of France. And I thought it was still a protectorate.
That's so, right? We have somebody from there who's listened to us.
Somebody is in France on some little island. And they're toted, according to what I read, they have like the highest population density, like one of the highest population densities in the world. Because there's like 850 per square kilometer. People
on that. If you're that person and you can get us there, we'll come and record a live show. Let's check it out, man. That would be so cool.
We're going to go to Buffett in Paris, and then we'll head over to Guernsey, island off of France.
Of course.
Oui.
Yeah. Or vice versa.
Yeah. So that's what I wanted to share with you. I mean, these people are out there listening to us, and we owe it to these guys for good shows. So I wanted to reach out and just say thank you. And it's exciting for us to know that we've gone around the world at least halfway so far.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. If you're from those areas or anywhere else for that matter, and you've been listening to us, thanks.
Good job.
For two guys who don't have a lot to say, that's a huge thank you from us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. More than anything. Wow. I mean, I thought I was good at the nations of the world, but that's, you know, it changes all the time. But you did a really good job on that little quiz.
Well, you know, the internet, Greg, is, you know, it connects people. And, you know.
Yeah, shut up. You weren't even looking at the internet. That was straight from your head. I know it.
Yep. No, I was just meaning the internet connects people.
Oh, you're right.
We're all connected.
Thank you for that little lesson.
The global village, Greg.
We are a global village. You're right.
We are
a global village. Speaking of global villages, we have 6,000 downloads now. Doesn't sound like a lot. We're just beginning. But that's pretty good for us.
Oh my God.
6,000 people have heard us for some reason. I think 5,999 are my mom.
Well, I think we need to quit our day jobs. It's time.
Do you think my mom is using some kind of a mask, you know, some kind of a VPN, and it just keeps
clearly
going to these different countries?
Dave, get upstairs. Record more episodes. We're at 59.94. I don't know. Your mother's not from Connecticut. I'm sorry.
No, she's all right. Not. But that was funny.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Dave is online. Greg's dad, by the way. Hi, Dave, if you're listening. Okay, so what do you feel like chatting about today, Greg? Because we were kicking around a lot of different topics, and
well, you know, we travel a lot. We don't always talk about. There's a couple things, like we could talk airports because we just, you know, went through airports recently with our trips. But I was thinking border crossings would be fun. I thought you had one that you were going to share at some point, but maybe that's later. So I went back and thought a couple of my border crossings, and at least one I was going to share with you. I can give you, you can either choose Central America or you can choose Venezuela.
Border crossings or just getting out of Venezuela?
Oh, anything you want to talk about, dude? That was an escape in itself.
Oh, well, what I guess one of the things you have to think about, we can talk freely about that now, right?
Yes, we can.
So, due to certain political situations between Chavez's government and the US government, how should we say it was incredibly difficult to obtain a legal working visa. So we were actually brought in to that school and we had tourist visas. The tourist visas would expire every 90 days because our school, they spent probably hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to obtain these things legally. So basically every 90 days, they would have to give us money and be like, okay, you have to leave the country for at least, what was it, 48 hours?
And that was the first couple of years, wasn't it, that you and I, you were down there a year before me, but I was there for four.
First 4 years for me.
So excellent. So my first
basically
3 years.
A vacation. Yeah, it was a vacation in the fall.
Every 90 days, we had to leave the country.
Yeah, in the spring. So for 4 years, you know, my scuba diving trips were getting paid for because the governments couldn't work it out and we had to have visas that weren't necessarily legal. The only trouble is the heat would turn on a little bit when you'd go through the airport, not so much the local one where we were, but when you'd go through Micatia, it would be a little terrifying because they'd be like, what are you doing here? And you're like, oh, I'm working with students. Oh, okay. And then they stamp your passport and you go. I mean, clearly there's lots of worse things that are being done and we're not obviously no knock against the Venezuelan government or the people or anything like that. It just, in those situations, anybody who's lived down there or lived through that knows you just do what you need to do to get by. Yeah, it made for some really hairy times trying to get out of the airport, going out and coming back in.
It just sort of felt wrong, didn't it? It felt like we were sort of sneaking around government things. And actually, it was the school was doing that for us and for a good reason, because they were just held. They could not have legal teachers coming in. There's a couple of, you know, there's quite a few things like that. We were working around the government and that was at the time. And we had to, as a school, as a business, they had to do that. And we had nothing to do with it. We were just teaching there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It was
just
a weird feeling going in and being questioned. And you're like, no hay problema.
You know? Yeah, that's exactly it. So, you know, one of the things I was thinking about is when we would go, I feel like that's one of the things that helped you. It helped you kind of keep our time there going because it was a pretty intense place to live. I mean, we had a pretty good life down there, but life down there could be intense. And every few months you were done and ready to get out. Like here, working in the Middle East, it's pretty chill. I don't necessarily need to get out of here. There's lots of stuff that I get to see and do, and security obviously isn't an issue around here like it was there. So, but that 90 days, when it came up, it was like, yeah, let's go. Jump on the first thing smoking and get out.
Yeah, I'll piggyback on that a little bit. You know, I think you and I both had different kinds of experiences down there in the beginning. Like I loved staying there and hanging out with locals and going to the different big cities and the barrios and stuff like that. I did a lot of travel during breaks and even stayed over New Year's and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I wasn't married. You were married and you guys would go home a little bit. You guys got used to going home. But for me, it was like my third or fourth country already. And I loved going around Venezuela early on. So even early on, I wasn't always traveling outside the country. Right now, I love to get on the first thing smoking, to be fair.
Yeah.
This place that we're living in, I'd rather get on a plane and just leave and go somewhere else.
Yeah, I get
but
that.
But there, yeah. And it sort of went back and forth, because sometimes you've just had it with all those, like, getting pecked to death by ducks, right? All the different red tape, all the different little things that were happening, and bad things did happen and they would pile up, and you're like, I need to get out of here and I need to go back and talk to somebody without having to use street Spanish or something, right?
Yep.
And I agree. And you broke out a lot too. I mean, you played baseball down there, you got a lot of local friends, but you still had that point where you got to go. And
yeah.
You and I both went on a couple trips like that. Let's head back to the States just to refresh a little bit, and then we'll come back down again, bring some toilet paper.
And you know, the funny part was, so let's say you wanted to just go from that coast, you know, I guess when you're, well, hold on, we don't want to talk about how long it would travel and travel time and all that. I guess we should just stick to our border crossings.
Well, we can talk about that. I mean, I was going to share that with the border crossing, because it means a lot. When you lived in Venezuela, there was no easy travel, right? And back in those days, there was no, you're mentioning that there's no easy way to get out. It was like, it was a full day just to get out of Venezuela. Other countries, you can just jump on a plane and you're in Miami within 6 hours, right? But it would take us an extra day just to go through all the rigmarole and get through the airport, get through the driving, whatever. And finally, you know, if you're lucky, if the plane actually left, right?
Yeah. One of the things that I've found it in travels is when you're going to be crossing borders, when you're going to be going to new countries, and obviously people have been doing this when they've had to do COVID updates and trying to keep up on each country's requirements and stuff like that. But one of the things that often gets overlooked when you're going to foreign countries is visa requirements just to get into those countries. And so especially traveling out of here with family and all that, one of the things you get to be a professional at is making sure visas are covered. You're making sure your entry requirements and payments are covered. You're making sure you don't have to register via websites and things like that before knowing that it's required. For example, we went to the Maldives for Eid break a couple of weeks ago, and there was a whole an app that you had to upload everybody's, all the travelers' information to, and they would not let you on your flights unless you had those apps taken care of. And we had some friends traveling with us who did not know about the app, and they almost missed their trip because they weren't aware of this requirement to get into the country. So
they're sitting there in the airport without any SIM card or anything like that, trying to download an app and try to work their way through it and fill all the information for their family members. Yeah. And you can't do that in like 5 minutes when you have interrupted service or any service at all on a phone and crying kids or whatever, and there's a lineup behind you. And traveling, like you said, we still have to research what the requirements are for that country to get in or to get out for some countries, and what you have to take care of beforehand before you travel. We have to do a lot of research. It's not just like we're going over to, you know, Chicago. I need a passport? I know I need my passport. How many pages do I need? You know, how long is it valid for? How many visas do I need? Do I need one entry and exit? Is it valid for the enough days that I'm there? I went to Thailand once, and I stayed in Thailand for 2 months, but I had to go on a visa run halfway through the summer. Halfway through it, my 30 days, I had to go to Myanmar, which was like a full day travel on boats and then taxis and stuff like that. You get there and all they do is you sit at a little hotel for 4 hours while they stamp your visas. Beautiful hotel. But you're just sitting there waiting for them to stamp something, which took them 4 hours. And then you get back on the taxi and back on the boat and you go all the way back to Thailand. And that was a visa run. But the tourism took care of everything and you didn't have to worry about it. It was very easy, but you had to take the time to do it. And that was just that one little country. And they change those visas all the time, the requirements for people. And it's a big diving country. So a lot of dive industry people know about visa runs. But people back in the States, people that don't travel that much, may not think about visas like we do.
Well, luckily, having a U.S. passport, too, allows you to get into a lot of countries where other places, if you have a passport from a different country, you obviously have a lot more hoops that you're going to need to jump through as well. And so I guess our biggest piece of advice is, number one, make sure you do your research and your homework about your destinations, places you're traveling through, places you might be laying over or stopping in, and looking at your requirements right there, because that's huge. And a lot of the, honestly, now a lot of the COVID stuff really seems to have died down, with the exception of if you're an American traveling to the United States.
Correct.
One of the things that it's funny too, is when you don't have the right form or you don't have the right paper, over anticipate everything. Because let me tell you what, there's nothing people that are working ticket booths or government offices, any sort of bureaucratic situation, there is nothing they love more than to tell you you don't have the right things or the right forms or the right information.
And they're never open. It's worse than the DMV, right? Yeah. It's like every day is a celebration and they only work between 3:05 and 3:06 that afternoon, if you're lucky.
And so when you've done it enough and when you've traveled enough and they're saying, oh, well, you need this. And you're like, ha-ha, I got it. And you lay it down in front of them. They're like, oh, no, you need this. Ha-ha, got it. Oh, no, you need this. Here's this.
I travel with digital, so I can use my phone for some tickets and stuff. But I tell you what, everything, even going to the States, I still had a paper copy of every reservation, a copy of every, whether it was a medical form or a visa form. Everything that I need when I travel to a country, I put it on paper, carry it with me in multiple copies, like three copies. I put one in my suitcase, one in my book bag, one in my other thing, whatever's the other thing, the carry-on, and then in my book bag, and then the suitcase. I split them up with different copies, and I'm like, here, you want a copy of my visa? Here's a copy of my visa. I'm not wasting my time on my phone, because you never know if you're going to have, you know, you're going to have wireless or coverage, because it goes in and out at some airports. It's not existent in some airports. Yep.
I always try to snapshot everything on my phone too. So I've got it on paper, not and get it digital. And I've also got the phone evidence of it as well.
We're professional travelers, Matt, you know, and that's just what has to happen, because you're going to walk up there. You got four boys and your wife standing in line with you. And they're like, they're probably going to be all over the place if you spend too much time at that ticket office. You are hyper organized before you leave on a trip.
You know, and part of it too is if the people working the counter holding up the line, my parental leeway also lessens to that point. And so you can gain, for those of you with kids, there's a certain amount of leverage you can gain, especially when you have four boys who love to wrestle, especially on suitcase conveyor belts and stuff like that. You'd be amazed at how quickly they'll get you through the line I will admit there's been a couple of occasions I've been like, okay, guys, you're up, your turn. Cause what daddy did didn't work. So let's have you start climbing on stuff and banging on plexiglass. And they're like, okay, let's get these kids out of here. You know, what's funny once is I was traveling back to the States once with the three oldest. And this is when the twins were four and our oldest was six. And we were passing through De Gaulle in Paris, France. And we got stopped by a couple of heavily armed French dudes, like the big, you know, M16s, big serious looking soldiers. They were clearly I was smuggling something along with my three sons or smuggling three sons or whatever. And they were giving it, you know, going through all my stuff. They had it all over the place. And finally, the twins like start climbing on their desk and kicking their chair over. And the guys just bust out laughing, like they just can't contain themselves. These two ding dong blonde haired twins are playing all over their stuff.
And they finally let you go.
What's that? Yeah. And finally they're like, forget it here. Just have a good day. Get out of here. We're sorry we bugged you. I was like, thanks, guys. So I'm trying to throw everything hurriedly back in there. So
some countries, they really give it to you with customs, right? Whether you're entering the country or leaving the country. I remember to this day, I remember landing in Cambodia. And I had a sprinkler. It was a $5 put in the ground, like a little dagger you put in the ground sprinkler that a buddy of mine needed for his garden, right?
Yeah. Sprinkler?
Literally a sprinkler, like a little.
Oh, I guarantee that got taken.
Well, the woman looks at the Cambodian, as I was coming in, the Cambodian woman at customs looks at it. She takes it out. They stop everything. They put me in a small room. They go through everything that I have. And the sprinkler just godsmacks this woman. She's like, what is this? You know, in very broken English. And here I am pantomiming, you know, I'm doing the sprinkler dance, you know, like you do on the dance floor. I'm like,
yeah.
And that doesn't exist there. I mean, they just have a guy with a hose with nothing on the end of the hose. It's like cut with a pair of scissors and puts his thumb in it. You know, that's somebody's job. And they don't even have hoses sometimes, right? They don't even water things. You know, it rains all the time. So who in their right mind would bring a sprinkler? And this is a $6 sprinkler from, you know, the hardware store. Right. And I literally,
which by the way would cost you $50 there.
Oh yeah. Well, the thing is, it cost, I don't care what it cost, it cost me a lot of time. She had to call her manager in. They had a discussion about this plastic do jobby thing. I have no idea what was going through their mind because I don't speak Khmer. And I mean, I had been living there for a year at least, so I was sort of ready for this. When you bring things in, you have to have a good sense of humor and you have to be very serious with everything. You know that. But boy, oh boy, that was just, or the time I brought the diaper genie. Do you know what a diaper genie is, Matt? You had four kids.
No. What's a diaper genie?
In the United States, they had this thing called the diaper genie. And it was basically, if you put the diaper in and then you, into the top of it and you twist the top, it constricts everything into plastic and it sort of goes down into a tube.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I brought one of those for a friend of mine, you know, Ron Bear. I brought Ron, had a brand new baby. So he and his Nicaraguan wife, I brought them a diaper genie down to Honduras. What do you think happened at customs with that one? I mean, try and explain and pantomime diaper genie to somebody. Wow, that was a good hour and a half, you know, sitting there. I could have been having a beer or a baleada instead, but no. I'm sitting at customs for a long time because I chose to bring this gift in. Right.
And right.
You can't describe these things if they don't have these in developing countries. There's some things you just don't have. So, yeah, customs is always fun.
What would you say is a huge piece of advice then people who are going to be traveling around in regards to border crossings, leaving countries? Like, what's what I told what I thought was my best tidbit, and just make sure you research ahead of time and have just be prepared to jump through any hoops or try to over anticipate.
Well, you know how I'm a technology guy, right? So you knew that, right? Anyway.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I think I'm familiar.
Okay. So one of my pieces of advice is this is if you're going to a country initially, or if you're leaving, you know, you're bringing stuff back into a country, maybe it's not just for vacation, but you're going over the border, you're coming into customs. My biggest piece of advice, and this even goes for shipping things from one country to another. Take everything out of the box, take all of the price tags off, take it all out of the packaging. You know this, Matt. We've done this for years.
Yes, of course.
You and I do this like it's second nature. Everything comes out of a bag. You can put them in Ziplocs. It means you need to make it look used, because if it looks used, they won't try and tax you on it. No matter what, they'll make up a tax if you bring it into a certain country, in a developing country especially. They'll make up something and they'll just randomly charge you $100 to bring it in, and it costs like $25.
Right.
Bar none. Every country I've lived in, if I bring things in, if I have a friend ship it to me, everything comes out of the packaging. Everything is put separately into suitcases, right? And I try to make sure that is what my number one, you know, one of my number one border crossing thing advice is, since we're talking about customs, because I've gone through it so many times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the tags. Yeah, everywhere I've been, that's a huge one where you got to take your tags off.
If it looks new, they're going to definitely tax you no matter what. They're going to make it up. And that's their job. They do that going into the U.S. too. If you buy a whole bunch of knickknacks in Maldives and they'll have the tags on the shirts and you spent $200 on family and friends, you know, bringing back seashells and shirts and other things like that, and they'll have tags on them, you're going to get questioned if they do decide to stop you. Other than that, I love your advice about traveling and researching, because you have to have multiple copies of everything. You have to know what the visa situation is, and every country is different. You can't get caught in the country with a visa that expires, because then you can't leave without paying some kind of a heavy fine. No matter where you are, you will be detained and have to pay a fine, which is exorbitant because you screwed up. You stayed too long in that country. All right, let's take a moment break for a little contact information. We'll be back in 5 seconds.
If you want to give us a little shout out and reach out, you can find us on Gmail at internationalteacherpodcast@gmail.com. Remember, complaints can be addressed to Greg, the single guy. And we are also on Instagram, ITP Expats. You can find us.
I got a story from Veni and I got a story from Honduras for you.
Which one you want to start with? Is the Veni one with your underwear? Set the scene for us, Greg. What was the scene for this? So you were leaving Venezuela and traveling where?
I was with Scott and Tara, our friends in Venezuela, and we decided to go on a trip, and they wanted to bring 4-month-old Elsie with us. And that's because Scotty, you know, he speaks fluent Spanish. Tara is just like this globetrotter, all, you know, after living there for a while with Scott.
Right.
Scott needed to have 3 more countries in South America to make it, like, to make it a home run, right? He wanted to, he's been to every country except for 3. And one of them was Suriname, and the other one was Guyana. And the third one was French Guyana, but we figured out that French Guyana was still a French protectorate, so we didn't have to go there. He only wanted countries. So we decided to go on this trip, the 3 of us, and we decided to go to Suriname and Guyana and have a trip. So if you go from Venezuela to the east, you'll hit the border with Guyana. You can't go by road, boat, or anything across the border between them because Venezuela and Guyana are fighting over the oil rights of that whole Orinoco. That's the top of the Amazon, right?
Orinoco Delta, yeah.
Yeah. So that's east of Venezuela. That's where we're headed. And then east of that is along the border with Guyana on the east is Suriname. Now, both of those countries were protectorates from the Dutch. Right. The Dutch had been there for a long time and got up and left. Well, anyway, I'm trying to give a little picture of what happened. We had to go on we couldn't just go straight to Guyana. So there's no roads or anything through the Amazon there. So we had to get a ferry from the very tip. I mean, you couldn't even step one more step outside of Venezuela because you'd be in the ocean. Right. There's that long peninsula. So we had to go all the way to the end of the peninsula at the farthest point of Venezuela and get on a little ferry. The ferry was supposed to leave around, I want to say, noon. There was no dock. There was nothing. We parked our car, got there on time, had our tickets and everything. And guess what? There was like no one there. So there's nothing. There's not even a ferry crossing. So we get there and we spent 5 hours there waiting for waiting for the ferry to show up. And then we spent another couple hours after it started raining. The National Guards actually let Tara and her infant sit underneath the awning in a plastic chair while we all sat outside. There was not even a beer around there. We get on this ferry and it's wonderful. We're dancing salsa and all this stuff. We're on our way to Trinidad. It's like, whew, we made it. We're on a boat away. We're going. And we get up to Trinidad Tobago it was great, dancing all the time. And we go to Guyana, and Guyana is this weird place. It's very underdeveloped, very like third world, and lots of mining companies around. And we spent Christmas there, very strange place. And the real border crossing came, Matt, when Scott and Tara and I, who have all traveled a lot, and along with Elsie, the 4-month-old, we get to the border of Guyana and Suriname, and we had made plans ahead. We knew what we could do.
Sure.
We had a bus that took us to the edge of the border. The border between the countries has a river that goes through it, a raging river. So we had to take a short little 30-minute little ferry across from Guyana to Suriname. So we had all our paperwork ready. We had our visas ready to go. We get there, and I will never forget, Tara and Scotty are changing the diaper, and Scotty puts down his beer, you know, because I had to get some beers for us while we're waiting for this little river ferry. And I'll never forget 2 things. Number one, she's just got this nasty diaper, and I'm videotaping. And while I'm videoing, watching them and talking to them, some guy comes up and starts drinking Scott's beer that he put down in his bottle. Like, you know, he's got like the little dregs left. This guy just comes along and starts drinking it. I'm like, oh my God, this is weird. So we waited for like another hour, 2 hours, 3 hours with nothing around us except maybe a beer vendor, little bit of food. And part of our deal was we bought the ferry bus ticket to get to the capital in Suriname. So I can't remember. Remember the name of it. Georgetown. I think that's from Guyana. So here's the deal. This is the hardest thing that happened to us. The most difficult part of this travel was we get on the ferry with everybody else. We spend 20 minutes going across the river. We land in Suriname, and there's a chain link fence and a guy sitting at a table. As soon as we land, the ferry, like it's all people on foot. And the ferry, the front of the ferry touches land, and everybody bolts as fast as they can to get in line. 200 people. Hmm. So Scott and Tara and I have an ace up our sleeve. Elsie, 4-month-old baby. And in South America, when you have a baby, they take care of you. In fact, we're standing at the back of the line because everybody else sprinted. She's got an infant. Scott and I, you know, didn't run ahead and save a spot or something, right? We're just walking along thinking we're all going to go across. And we already set up our bus to get us from the ferry into the city. Sure. This is sweet. So it starts raining. And this guy comes up and offers her to go through the line. And Scott and I follow Tara. We get out of the end of the line. We follow Tara up to the security and up to the customs guy with the stamp. And the guy goes, gives us the no finger, like, get back in line to Scott and I. So here's Tara with the infant, and she's at the front of the line, and they stamp her through, and we're 200 people back at the end of the line in the rain, and we can't go anywhere. We can't get through. So it doesn't help us at all. So Tara watches. She stands underneath this awning while it's raining. We watch everybody go through, get stamped, and everybody fills up the bus and then fills up the next bus. And then there's no buses, and there's two people in front of us. Scott and I go through, finally get ours stamped, and we get to the other side of the chain link fence, and there's no bus. There's nothing. We're in the middle of the jungle. The guards are just sitting there talking, one chair, you know, talking, hanging out. And we're like, what do we do now? Luckily, somebody was there that had a cell phone. Some local had a cell phone. He spoke English with us. We, you know, whatever. We spoke Spanish, but he spoke English with us. And he's like, I'll call and get us a bus. So there's like 7 people left, including us. And we all wait for like 2 hours while they send a new bus. And we get on the bus after waiting in the rain for 2 hours. And the guy says, all right. As we're all getting in, he turns around. He says, okay, everybody, but you're going to have to pay extra for the other seats of the bus because...
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
Because the bus came all the way from the city for an hour through the jungle, and it's going to go all the way back. And therefore, there's only 7 of you, and we need to have 20 more tickets or whatever. So we have to split the deal and pay him right there. And we're like, wait a minute. We already bought this whole thing. You know, whatever his name was, Bob or Bill or whatever, Bill's bus, strange, you know, but we fought with this guy, and it was just, I was ready to pull the guy out of the bus and actually just leave him in the jungle bleeding. You know, it was so bad. I don't think I've ever been more upset in my life with a stranger than this guy trying to get, he stopped the bus. In fact, he stopped the bus and said, get off. And Scott and I was like, look at each other. And I said, no effing way. I'm not getting off this effing bus. And I just went off. Matt, you've never seen me like this before.
Sure.
Because I'm thinking about Elsie. Scott's thinking the same thing. We're like, we're going to beat down this guy. There's going to be a death today. And we're going to drive the bus back into Suriname, and they're going to find this body later. Because this guy's trying to screw us after we already paid for the whole thing. Like you said, we already arranged for this whole trip. So this is the worst border crossing we ever had. And as soon as we got into the city, we made him drive to the bus owner's house, and he's sweeping his like garage, right? His little chicken area. And he gets out, and we argued for an hour with this guy. And finally he had enough, and he's like, fine. All right. Just take them back to the hotel. And because we argued with him like for an hour, the fact that we had already done all this ahead of time, it's his fault because they let a bunch of other people on that bus. They let other people ride that bus instead of waiting for us to get through. The bus fills up and he left automatic. So anyway, that was probably the worst travel experience I've ever had. And I experienced it with Scotty and Tara, who are two real good travelers. Man, fantastic people to travel with. It's hard to get us riled up, but it was not safe. We were in the middle of a jungle. I mean, someone could have just taken us out right there. They would never know. Sure. They would have found us in the middle of the jungle. Nobody knew where we were.
Yeah.
Oh, I need to take a breath. Oh, we did have a hot shower at the hotel that night. Scott didn't want to, you know, he's not always willing to part with money, and he wants to stay frugal. Yeah, yep. Scotty's frugal when we travel. But that night, Tara and I looked at him and we said, we are staying in a hotel with hot water. He's like, okay.
Yeah.
Scotty, Tara, you listening to this? I love you guys. That was a great trip. It was a big challenge for us.
The only thing, gosh, I can't even think of the only, I don't have any real horror stories like that.
I hope you don't. I don't wish a horror story like that on anybody. You know, you travel with your family and you plan ahead and you don't go to those like developing, like strange, like Scotty and I are both very challenged. We challenge life. You know, we go off. That was a big risk. We look back on it now and Elsie's like, well, why do we take an infant with us? Right. But it was all part of the challenge.
Doing that whatsoever. When I go on my vacations, I want to go on vacation. I don't want to go to, oh, no way. But that's a personal preference thing. Backpacker, I want stuff, linens, warm water, and cold drinks. Otherwise, I'm not going.
You know, on that same trip, the last thing I'll tell you about is we're on a 4x4 travel package, right? We stay at these really nice places with these howling monkeys in the forest, and we go off on this trip, and the guy, the driver, stops along the side of the road because there's this man holding an aardvark, an anteater, in his hand. Mm-hmm. And this thing is just bleeding out like bloody murder, like, wah, wah, like super loud. And we stop. We wanted to see what's going on. And the driver says, well, this is the food, because they eat anything in the jungle just to survive. This guy has nothing. Sure. He's going to take it home for his family. I said, wow, that's pretty small. He goes, yeah, but he's holding it because the mother's going to come and try and rescue its baby so he can get the mom too. And I'm like, what a horror story. Oh, we were just like, oh, we're so sorry we asked.
Just another Thursday though, right?
It's right. Hey, I got the food, honey. Came home.
Yeah.
There was an aardvark. Oh, God. I don't know either, dude. That's a tough
one. The translation for that would be the aardvark.
That was a strange trip. But you know what? Scotty and Tara, wherever you are in, they're not Mexico, are they anymore?
Yeah, they're wrapping they're leaving up Mexico. They're heading to Morocco next year.
Morocco, that's right. Well, yeah, I hope to hear from them. We're going to get them on this show, and we'll talk about it, and we'll refer back to our fun story.
We'll get them back on again. If people are listening to this and they want to chime in via Instagram, they can look us up on ITP Expats and throw in your stories there. Those are things that we can share. I know people have way worse horror stories than us, but you can also email us at internationalteacherpodcast@gmail.com with some of your horror stories.
And ITP Expats also on Twitter, that they can reach out to us. I know a lot of the Twitter sphere, a lot of people are out there. I've been challenged to do much more with Twitter and trying to sell my book and trying to get people to listen to this podcast. So it's worked out pretty well. I think some people have seen us out there.
What book?
Well, you know, it's that book I wrote called Finding the Right Fit.
Finding the Right Fit. Tell me more, Greg.
Oh,
where can I get one of these copies of your book?
It's on Amazon, Matt. You can just look up Gregory Lemoyne or Finding the Right Fit. You can find that. It is a good book. You read it, didn't you? You're reading it.
I am about 35% the way through it. I skipped through all the first part because I've done all that stuff. So I went to the stories in the second half of the book and have been sharing them with some friends of mine. And while laughing, there was a couple of Lebanese nationals that you're going to have to answer to if you have ever get to meet them. So, but
oh, really? Because of my stories of skiing in Lebanon over New Year's?
Maybe that one. Yeah. So,
Did I get in a little hot water with those guys then? You know, I love the Lebanese. I love Lebanese people. I really had a great time. And you know what? The best food in the whole world is, Matt.
Lebanese
food.
Come on, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah. I look forward to it. We can't make everybody happy. You know that.
Yeah. You know what? We try to do that on the International Teacher Podcast, but maybe not just today. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to wrap this up. And like we said, if you've got any border or travel stories, I know they abound and they're out there and they're wacky and they're crazy. Hit us up on Twitter, ITP Expats, or Instagram under the same ITP Expats, or of course, Gmail, internationalteacherpodcast@gmail.com. And we would be happy to share some of those fun and adventurous stories of yours. So listeners, thanks in the 90 plus countries and the thousands of downloads that we've been given already. We can say thousands now, Greg.
I know we can. And I look forward to having a couple thousands of, I can't say that word, a couple thousand more in the next couple months.
And now that I'm done with my master's program and we're entering the summer season, I think we can maybe even uptick our recordings as well. So more content for the listeners out there. All right. Well, I'm going to be signing off. Thanks everybody for joining us. We sure do appreciate you checking us out. And this is the International Teacher Podcast. And I am Matt, Family Guy, signing off.
And Greg, the single guy, signing off. Until next time, thank you for listening.
Have a great one, everybody.